name is Jackie Lamport. Today is Tuesday, November 30th. Welcome to the Capital Daily Podcast. Today on the show.
The expense of being able to house and care for children in this region is so massive that in terms of reasons to not have a child, those kind of more immediate things are probably kind of more top of the list.
Birth rates across the country are falling to concerning levels. But nowhere is as concerning as right here in Victoria. Today, we get a sense of the numbers, the consequences this may have, and dig into why it's happening. Today's Capital Daily Podcast is brought to you by Island Deaf and Hard of Hearing Center. Today is Giving Tuesday, so remember, when you purchase your hearing aids at Island Deaf and Hard of Hearing Center, you help others in our community. To hear better and help others, visit idhhc.ca. Having a child is a pivotal moment in a person's life. It's quite literally life-altering. I wouldn't know personally, as I don't have children, but my sister has three, and I can safely say, from observing that at least, it's a big commitment. It used to be a given. By your 30s, you should be married and either have a child or be expecting one. But at some point, something shifted. A lot of people are waiting longer to have kids, and there are some who are choosing not to have any at all. As someone who is the childbearing age, and with most of my friends also being of that age, I can safely say that I know significantly more people who haven't had children or have no desire to have children than I know who do. This is far from uncommon, especially in Victoria. While we can all say what we will based on anecdotal evidence, Capital Daily reporter Jolene Rudicella wanted to take things a step further and do some factual research. She spoke with Don Kerr, a demographer who teaches at King's University College at Western University, to find out what exactly is happening, and she also spoke to multiple families in Victoria to find out why. Today, we welcome her to the show, and you'll also hear the voice of Don Kerr and various families. Jolene, hello again.
Hello.
Fascinating story. Really interesting stuff, and you covered a lot. So let's try and get to most of it. Obviously, people can read the entire story if they're still curious. But let's start with this. Canada as a whole is declining in birth rates, but you focused in primarily on Victoria. What did you learn about our city specifically?
Victoria is really interesting because it actually has the lowest fertility rate of any census metropolitan area in Canada. So Victoria's birth rate is 0.95 compared to Canada's, which is 1.4. So to put that into context, the rate of replacement is 2.1. So that would be the number of new births needed to keep the population stable. And that doesn't include emigration and immigration.
That's unprecedented. I've never heard of that in Canada.
I've never heard
about total fertility rate falling below one in any city across Canada. I mean, by the way, at the national level, the birth rate has fallen to an unprecedented low as well. The total fertility rate is down at around actually just a touch below 1.4 births on average, which is again unprecedented. So, what's going on here? It is unusual. Why is it important? It has all sorts of consequences for the type of society that we're living in, for that matter.
I think when we look at that information, a lot of people familiar with Victoria might assume it has to do with the city's age demographics. As you noted in your story, we have one of the highest percentages across the country of people over 65 at 22%, and one of the lowest percentages of youth under 15 at 12.3%. But that actually isn't the cause of our low numbers.
So that's the interesting thing about fertility rate. It's actually different than the number of births per capita. So how it's calculated is by taking into consideration age-specific fertility and standardizing for the differences in fertility as people age.
And then another stat that you pointed out in your article, which is quite interesting, and it is, again, focusing back on age, but it's that if these numbers stay the same, we are looking at a very old country in the future.
Because Canadians are living longer than ever with modern medicine and with the addition of fewer births, seniors currently outnumber children for the first time in Canada's history. And by 2056, it's estimated that people 65 and older are actually projected to make up a third of the country's population. So that's pretty huge. I think in Victoria currently, people age 65 plus make up about 22% of the population right now.
A very low birth rate contributes quite dramatically to population aging, right? And already the city of Victoria, the CMA of the metropolitan area of Victoria, is older than any other CMA in Canada in terms of the proportion of the population over the age of 65, right? And not many kids, not many people under the age of 15.
Jolene, you and I are going to be part of that problem age group that is looking for like senior care, and everybody else is going to have to deal with it. So we'll see about that. Okay, but Victoria, again, specifically, we are Victorian, so let's look at those numbers. It already has some pretty shocking numbers.
Yeah, it does. So already seniors outnumber children under 14 by a rate of about 2-1.
Wow.
And there are more people over 80 than there are kids, and that number really isn't going to change. So in 2020, Victoria already had way more deaths than births. It had about 2,800 births and 3,600 deaths. So that's a pretty big difference.
So what you're saying is we're going to be needing to print a lot more senior crossing and less playground zone signs?
Yeah, it's definitely possible.
Okay, so I think a lot of people could have already assumed a lot of that just looking at their neighbors, the people around them, seeing Canada as a whole. I mean, this issue isn't something that is brand new and shocking to people. So we've kind of laid out, okay, here's the issue. But before we talk about why, because I know you did speak to some families, can you lay out some of the consequences that we may see from a low birth rate?
I spoke with Don Kerr, who is a demographer at King's University College at Western University in London, Ontario, and he did tell me about some of the consequences of a low fertility rate. So these include things like labor shortages, because there's just fewer young people in the workforce. And then there's also less people to help with aging family members.
This is kind of going back to another conversation that I had on a different episode of the podcast with urban planner Jennifer Kiesmatt. We were talking about cities and what makes for a vibrant and successful city. And one of those things was to have a lot of youth in the city, because that's the driving force of labor, of the economy, and of, you know, culture. So, I mean, just as a side note, that's something that we might see a consequence of as well. But I know that one of the fixes that Canada has been looking into or has been trying to use over the past couple decades is immigration.
You know, your city in particular, in southwestern British Columbia in particular, is completely reliant upon migration for its population growth, because Vancouver, Victoria, these cities have been, Victoria has been growing. It's just, it's all through migration from elsewhere in the province, as well as international migration.
But when you spoke to Don, you found out that that isn't necessarily going to work in the long run.
Canada's population has been decreasing naturally for a long time. So like I mentioned before, the rate of replacement is 2.1, and we've been below that for decades, really. So the reason that Canada's population, and Victoria's population especially, is still growing is because of immigration. That's a huge driver of population growth. But the thing with immigration is that it actually doesn't have much of an effect on our aging population. So when you think about it, the immigrants that are coming from elsewhere around the world are typically young adults, but also older adults. I mean, some children come as well, but that's the typical age range. And of course, they age as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, yeah, like I said, it's not really a solution to population aging.
Now let's move into talking about why this may be the case. One hard stat that we can point to that allows us to at least speculate about why birth rates are falling is the age at which folks are having children. And I understand that BC's is pretty high.
The average age of first-time mothers in BC is actually the highest out of any province in Canada, and it's 31.6, and that's based on 2016 Statistics Canada data. And so for the same year, the average age in Canada was 29.2. And again, that has been ticking up for decades. The youngest that new Canadian moms have been since the Second World War was actually in 1966, when the average was under 24. So it has gone up a lot since then.
Yeah. I mean, just thinking about it as somebody who's 26, it's weird to me to think that there was like a point where it would have been completely normal for me to already have a child or two, because I honestly can't imagine having a child at this age. And then I feel like I can safely say that for a lot of my friends who are in the same age range.
I completely agree. I mean, I'm 25, and to think about having a kid right now is just no.
Yeah. So we are the group that we're talking about. Okay. Which is good insight. Looking at that number, though, the age at which people are having children and how it does continue to go up, I think it might be safe to assume that a major factor could be a change in lifestyle over the past few generations. More and more women are getting an education and a career. Is that something that you found when speaking to people?
Totally. So a big thing that a couple of people did tell me was that they're really career driven. And that's often because women are going to university, college more. It's no longer expected that women become mothers and have children at a young age. There's much more opportunities, of course, and women are definitely taking those, like I am myself. So that is one of the big factors that's pushing the age back, because university is 4 years, and then you want to get established in a career, make some money, get a little bit of financial stability. And more people are taking that route, which is definitely pushing the ages back.
This is what Hannah had to say about that.
I'm also I'm career oriented too. And as a woman, that's challenging to figure out. I feel like I'm constantly like, okay, this job, like if I want to do this thing, how is that going to play into like the plan for having kids and maternity leaves and all of that sort of stuff? It feels very challenging.
Yeah, now not to mention that if we are looking just at education, it's becoming a lot more common to get, you know, say your master's or your PhD, because as everybody has an undergrad now, it seems like to stand out above the crowd, you have to have even more than that. That's another, what, two, could be another 4 years on top of your undergrad even?
Totally. Yeah. And then just the job market itself, it can be quite tough depending on what field you're in. So there are a lot of challenges there.
Demographers would refer to as sort of intended fertility. But if you compare that with actual fertility, the total fertility rate, it is consistently lower than intended fertility. People end up in Canada having fewer kids than they actually want to have because life gets in the way.
We'll pause here quickly for a word from our sponsor. Today's Capital Daily Podcast is brought to you by Island Deaf and Hard of Hearing Center. On this Giving Tuesday, you can hear better and help others by purchasing your hearing aids at IDHHC through their Sound of Change program. For more information, go to IDHHC.ca. I know you spoke to some couples, and this is something that you heard quite a lot, and that's that the cost of living is getting too high for people to think about bringing a child into their lives. For one, living on a single salary is nearly impossible on the average Canadian incomes, let alone supporting a family. Tell me about what you heard from people.
A couple people did tell me that affordability was one of the main reasons that they are putting off having a kid. And one woman, Hannah Ross, she told me that her and her husband are actually looking into having a kid while in a one-bedroom apartment, because a two-bedroom apartment, it just pushes their budget a little bit too far.
What we are considering now is could we live in a one bedroom with kids? like, is that something that we could achieve? Other people in parts of the world live in small places and live in apartments in other urban centers, and they make it work and they have really vibrant lives and live in vibrant communities. So we're trying to figure out how we could adjust our lifestyle to just to live in a small place instead of paying more rent to have more space.
This is what Elise Cote said.
The expense of, you know, being able to house and care for children in this region is so massive that, you know, I think in terms of reasons to not have a child, those kind of more immediate things are probably kind of more top of the list.
Another thing that I found interesting, and it's not just because you pointed to one of the podcast episodes, was the fact that there isn't a lot of purpose-built family housing being developed. And that's something that I had spoken to with Lisa Helps about, who did say that they were addressing that issue and trying to bring in more housing that's meant for families. But you also spoke to MP Grace Lohr, who pointed out another issue, which was that childcare is so expensive now. This is something that the country's been looking at solutions for, but what did Grace say?
Grace, she also did talk about housing and just how unaffordable it is, but she mentioned herself, she has two kids and childcare is a really big struggle in Victoria. And she did point to some of the things that the government of BC is doing. For example, there's currently 889 provincially funded childcare spaces in the city of Victoria itself. There are also 162 spaces in the city that are part of the $10 a day pilot program. And there are also a lot of benefits that are like monetary benefits that are available to families, as well as funding for childcare operators. So there is a lot happening. Same with some new buildings being built in Victoria with childcare spaces. But according to the latest Vital Signs report, that still isn't quite enough for all of the families in the South Island. So according to that report, there's currently only enough child care spaces for about 25% of the South Island's children between 0 and 12.
The $10 a day child care is something that people have been advocating for a long time, but that's not necessarily something that we'll see the impacts of until further down the road. But we can look to a province that has had affordable daycare implemented for quite some time now. What can we learn from Quebec?
Quebec has had affordable childcare, like you mentioned, for quite a while. And recently they committed to having spaces for every child in the province by 2025, which is pretty significant. When I spoke with Don Kerr, he told me that Quebec also has a higher than average fertility rate. And he says that the two things are likely connected because parents can actually afford to put their children in childcare and they don't have to make those difficult decisions.
It's interesting to see the birth rate slightly higher in Quebec than elsewhere in Canada. Again, that's a place where the government has been actively very proactive in sort of supporting families, making it easier for families. Particularly, you've heard of their $10 a day or $12 a day childcare program, which is remarkably inexpensive. You compare that with other parts of Canada, the birth rate's a bit higher.
So there we might possibly have a small solution, or at least a part of the puzzle, but there are some larger issues that probably aren't going to be solved by implementing a piece of policy. That's something that a lot of us are feeling anxiety for a number of reasons. What did you hear from Amy and Scott Janswood?
Amy and Scott Janswood, they are really having a tough time deciding whether or not they want to have kids. They're both 31 years old, and they know it's a decision that they do need to make sooner than later. But one of the things that has really made the decision hard for them is climate anxiety. They're just worried about what a future might look like for any potential children that they have. They did have other reasons as well for not having kids. They told me that they're not really ready for the fundamental changes that come with having kids, but it still really terrifies them to imagine what life might look like for any children that they may have.
Another person you spoke to was Elise Cote, and she had similar thoughts about the climate future.
Part of it was just like, that feeling of like, what kind of future is there, and what kind of, you know, challenging circumstances are these, you know, children who are being born now going to live through. But then another part of it at that time for me was, you know, is that increase to my footprint the right thing to do or the fair thing to do, in terms of, you know, there was a lot of rhetoric about, and there still is, about, you know, having less kids being good for the environment. And so I felt like guilty for even wanting to have another kid.
When we're talking about anxiety for things going on in the world, and that's, climate change is obviously a big one, but there's a very unique situation that we've seen in the past couple of years, which we haven't actually seen the numbers yet for, and that's COVID. You and Don Kerr spoke about that. What did he say?
Kerr did tell me that they're not super sure what the effects of the pandemic will be on fertility rates yet, but between 2019 and 2020, there was a 3.6% decrease in the number of live births, and the lowest number of births in any year since 2006. So again, it's unclear if that's due to the pandemic, but Kerr says that it likely had an effect, and it'll be interesting to see next year's numbers to see, to really get a sense of the impact that the pandemic had.
Kerr also speculated with you about the possible reasons that we might see a decrease in fertility.
We didn't get locked down with this COVID pandemic until March of 2020, right? So it would have had an impact on fertility in 2020, I would think, as a lot of women would not want to end up in a hospital during the middle of a pandemic giving birth. There's probably, it would sound like a risky situation for a lot of people. And also there was a lot of economic uncertainty introduced because of COVID-19. So a lot of people lost their jobs and so on. I don't think that's a good time to have kids for a lot of people. So there was probably a lot of people who ended their pregnancies and so on and so forth in 2020 because of it. And we did see a drop off in the birth rate towards the end of 2020. So I'm really interested in knowing what's going to happen in 2021. Is the birth rate going to fall even further?
There's a lot of things going on in the world or different policies that could be impacting people's choices about whether or not they want to have children. But one of the things that I think it's important to take into account is that people are looking at quality of life and thinking about what they actually want from life. And that's something that Kim had told you about.
When I did talk to Kim, she did tell me that she might not want to have kids because she really does enjoy her life as it is now.
You know, I think a lot of women growing up as kids are just like, oh, well, by the time I'm 30, I'm going to have, like, you know, a husband and a dog and two kids or whatever. And so for a long time, I kind of just thought, well, that's probably what my life's going to look like. But I think that in my, like, early 20s, when I was starting to figure out, like, who I am and what I like, and start to build more of an identity, I was starting to think, like, maybe that's not for me. Like, there's lots of things I want to do with my life in terms of my career and traveling. And
to counter that, something that Don had said, and this partly, I mean, I guess is just because of the way that our society is set up. You rely on your children when you get older, but if you don't have children, then maybe down the line, you're thinking, who's going to take care of me?
What's the reality for childless adults? Maybe, I don't know, you're in your 20s, 30s now, maybe 30 years down the road or 40 years down the road, you know, when you're getting a bit older. Maybe you might want to rely upon family in terms of getting by on a day-to-day basis. You might need a little bit of help from your kid when you're getting those advanced ages, you know. You know, they're not going to have any children around or any grandchildren around to potentially help them out, to potentially give them a bit of company, right? Maybe people are more likely to age in isolation without family members around. I mean, I can think of all sorts of consequences of all this.
But again, that's based on the idea that your children have to take care of you when you're older, which doesn't always have to be the case, but that's just a standard that we seem to have set up. Let's finish off on one last interesting note from your article, and that's something that I'm not sure what we can take from, but it's just interesting on its own, and that's that the only other cities in the world with birth rates like Victoria aren't even in North America.
So some of the other cities that Don compared Victoria to were some places in East Asia. So Hong Kong, their fertility rate is 1.05. Taiwan's is 1.07. And Singapore's is 1.1. So those are still a little bit higher than Victoria. And then, interestingly, he mentioned that in Canada, besides Vancouver, which has the second lowest fertility rate, St. John's and Halifax are next. And he didn't know why. That's something that really intrigues him, because, yeah, he joked that there must be something in the ocean air in both coasts of the country. But yeah, quite interesting.
Unusually low fertility birth rate on both coasts. Why is that the case? Because, I mean, culturally and economically, some big differences there, right? So it's surprising to me.
There's a lot of conversation here and a lot of things to think about, and that's what I think makes this such a great story. So, Jolene, thank you so much for creating this conversation. It's been really fun.
Yeah, it's been great. Thanks so much for having me.
If you want to read Jolene's full story, as always, you can do so at capitaldaily.ca. And if you want to help support Capital Daily's local journalism and connect your business with our engaged and curious Greater Victoria audience of over 50,000, then you can email our partnerships team at advertising@capitaldaily.ca. Thanks so much for joining us today. If you enjoyed the show, please leave a rating and a review, and also subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes going forward. We post new shows every Monday to Friday. My name is Jackie Lamport. This is the Capital Daily Podcast. We'll talk to you tomorrow.